Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Everyone, welcome to episode 571 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. Thanks for joining us. This is our final week of Halloween-ish episodes. Thank you for tuning in all month long and hopefully working on some ideas for the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Survivor Series, all of that good stuff. Chad Smart joins me once again. And Chad, last night, as we're recording this on Sunday morning, was Halloween Havoc. Did you watch? I know you didn't watch because you don't have. I think that's all on ESPN as well, right?
It's on Peacock. You can watch it. You could support the next generation, but you don't because it's terrible. Mm-hmm. No, actually, I did watch it. That's why I told you I couldn't record until.
Okay.
Time to record.
So I didn't. You know, they've changed all this stuff. And here I am yelling, old man yelling. It's like I can't keep up with where stuff is streaming because I was hoping to watch, go back and watch Halloween Havoc, 1995 for the podcast. But
it's on Peacock.
It is.
Peacock still has the WWE Network. They just don't have the new PLEs.
Okay, because when I Googled it, it said that they had gotten rid of all of the library, too. I just Googled it. I didn't even go look to see. So, okay.
I mean, I believe it's everything. I mean, I was watching WCW, a few weeks ago. But
okay, well, that's...
There's also the WCW YouTube channel now.
I saw that,
been putting up.
Well, maybe next year we'll do that. What'd you think
of... I'll be gone by next year.
Yeah, probably. What'd you think of Havoc?
You know, it's NXT, which I don't watch. I can't watch on a weekly basis because I don't have the CW. So I'm not invested in it. Mm-hmm. I watched it started watching it at like 11 o'clock last night and was doing other things. So it looked fine. There's a little too much plunder matches. I think the tag team match was a plunder match. The Ethan Page match was a plunder match.
What's a plunder match?
Just using weapons and basically no DQ street fights. Because the Hardys tag team match was a broken Hardys match or whatever it's called. And then the Ethan Page, Dr. Wagner Jr. match was a DO. I think a Dio de Muertos match or Day of the Dead match, which had spooky lighting, which was also, they never get that right, in my opinion. It always just makes it more, not confusing, but it's like, I want to see what's going on in the ring. Turn the lights up.
But not enough aquariums involved in this event.
Exactly.
Okay. They should have had piranhas in that aquarium. I thought that would have been a good.
They should have, yeah. They should have had something. I mean, even those little fish that they suck on your feet at something.
But, oh yeah, that would have been eventful.
Yeah, no, the thing about that match I saw several times, and you'll probably appreciate this because of being from Missouri, close to Missouri, you know the Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Commission,
yeah,
still exists for some reason in 2025. Yes. But it's like they couldn't do blood, they couldn't do a lot of things that you would normally expect from that style of match in AEW and those wrestlers in AEW. Yeah. And it's like, so why did you book this match in St. Louis then? If you can't,
It's weird to me that, yeah, that commission still exists, because I know back even when CAPE Championship Wrestling was running, they had run into some issues with the athletic commission in Missouri. And that's why I think a lot of, when you get up into like the Metro East area of St., if you know, for folks who are familiar with the area, there's a lot more, I feel like indie shows and things that are going on just across the river, because it's still in that St. Louis market, but you're able to kind of, which it's surprising to me because, you know, not to get into politics, but, you know, Missouri is a more conservative state, and you feel like they're not going to have as many rules. But in Illinois, it's a bit more liberal. There are more law, or a lot more liberal, I should say. And so you would think it'd be the opposite, that Illinois would kind of have that crackdown. But I, you know, I, in my opinion, the Missouri Athletic Commission is just a racket, and, you know, they're trying to get money, or, you know, find a reason. And you bring up a good point. Why would you book that style of match? Or, you know, I wonder if in the long run that will hurt Missouri or St. Louis area's chances of getting big shows from AEW in the future, if that was even thought of or put into consideration. And for the next time, then maybe they won't be back. I know they've done a lot of shows at, and I don't know how to pronounce the name of that arena, Chaffetz Arena. So yeah, it's interesting. Cause did you go to a show there for AEW, or cause they've run other independent shows there, I believe, haven't they?
Yeah. I've never, to my knowledge, no, I don't think I've ever been to that arena. So I'm not really sure where it's located.
I think it's in the St. Charles area, but I mean, I'm not St. Louis. I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
I'm speaking, and yes.
I don't know my boroughs of St. Louis. I don't know where I went to high school.
Very true.
One other thing I was going to bring up real quick. You sent me a video of Marco Stunt, who is apparently now a car salesman. And I don't know if you read any of the comments on the video, but I think the best one was, I thought he didn't sell anything.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those who followed CAPE Championship Wrestling, and then eventually he made the jump to AEW, was part of the Jungle, or the Jurassic Express, with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, Marco Stunt. Mr. Fun Size, he's now selling cars in Mississippi. I think that's where he's from originally, because for a while there, he was the commissioner or the GM of CAPE Championship Wrestling. And CAPE Wrestling, I think, has kind of faded away, but I'm glad to see that he's still on social media and having fun and finding life after wrestling, because I think he had suffered some pretty serious injuries that kind of put him on the shelf originally. So
yeah.
So we're going to do another blind ranking. I know you love these, so
I do.
This is going to be our final Halloween version of the blind rankings, and these are wrestlers, and I'll give you a spoiler. There is one current wrestler on this list that I want you to blind rank, with a Halloween style gimmick that should have been World Heavyweight Champion. You know, we always look at kind of back in the, and I guess when you really look at it though, WCW side of things, it was Ric Flair, it was Lex Luger, it was Sting, eventually Hulk Hogan. You know, same thing in the WWF. It was guys like Hulk Hogan and Diesel and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. You know, they all had these certain looks or styles about them. They weren't gimmicks, I guess. And I know to an extent, like Undertaker and Kane were gimmicks that became world champion, probably most famously, but for the most part, your world champion looked like a guy that you would run into at the airport. He's not in a bunch of makeup or costumes or anything like that. So today we're going to put some of these over the top characters and see if they should have been world champ in their respective companies, because I have a list from both WCW and WWE. So I want you to blind rank these fellas. Okay. Up first, the late, great Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, who was pretty evil gimmick going on in Florida and WCW days.
I'm going to put him at 5, because I don't think he should have been world champion. I think he's a better manager than wrestler.
Okay. We're going to talk more about him too later in this week's episode. Next up is the leader of the Brood, Gangrel.
Wow, this could be interesting. I'm going with four because I don't think, again, I think he was a good leader of the Brood, but I don't think he had the, you know, obviously I think Edge and Christian far outpaced him in terms of.
Yeah.
Aura, or what do the kids say today? Your,
I think it's Aura.
Is it Aura? Aura? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Which I don't think Gangrel held maybe the hardcore title, but I don't think he was a champion at all in his time. And this was in an era of WWE where it seemed like everybody was getting at least IC or tag titles. So
yeah.
Up next, one of my personal favorites, the early version, the incarnation, the evil Doink the Clown, the Matt Bourne Doink the Clown.
So you're going world champion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, this one's tough because I definitely don't think he's won. I don't know if I want to just keep going up the ladder and go three. I don't think he... In today's environment, I think people would clamor for him to be
yes.
the world champion.
Yes, but in 1993.
But in three, no. I don't think it's not the type of character that's going to be. So I'm going one rung up the ladder at number three.
Okay. Number two, someone that you got up close and personal with at one point, Papa Shango.
Just for funsies, I'm going to go one because I think he could have been a transitional champion or, you know, had like Undertaker had that short title run at first before, you know, WrestleMania 13. So, yeah, I think Papa Shango could have done a short program with Hogan or Warrior or Doink the Clown to be champion.
Well, and Papa Shango comes in at an interesting time in the company because it's kind of the end of the Hulkamania era. Flair is there. We see the big to-do at WrestleMania 8 where he comes out and is at the end of the main event. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense that they would have factored him in at least maybe in a championship feud at the very least. So, and I don't think we ever really got that either. But 92, 93 is kind of a janked up year, I think, in terms of wrestling because a lot of moving parts and with Hogan kind of – in and out, hokey pokey, not sure what he's going to do. They have Savage, they have the Warrior, they have Flair, but that's still kind of all that hangover from the 80s. So maybe a Papa Shango or a Sid Vicious run as champ in that early part of the 90s would have been something that we would have liked to have seen. So
yeah.
Our last entry, and I promised someone current or active, I think he's still an active wrestler, and that is Danhausen. Which I guess would have to be number two.
It'll be two, yeah. And I think that's a good, I mean, again, I haven't seen a whole lot of Danhausen's actual wrestling. And I think Danhausen is a better character than wrestler from what I've seen. Like, I don't...
He was with AEW at one point, right?
He's still under contract. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we can put him at two because in today's wrestling environment, I could see him putting the title on him for merchandising and publicity purposes. But I don't think I've seen enough of his actual wrestling to be able to comment on his wrestling ability. But I think he's more of a pop the crowd with a quick pop and then move on. So,
well, if you're watching on video, I am wearing my Chikara masked wrestling shirt that Chad gave me a while back. And that's kind of the topic-ish of today is like the campiness of wrestling and why some wrestlers or promotions get a pass and others are more harshly criticized or critiqued. And I'm specifically going to start with Chikara because you're the one that kind of turned me to the Chikara way of seeing things. And, you know, where WWE and WCW back in the day with the Dungeon of Doom, and we'll get to them in a little bit, and the Ministry of Darkness, and you know, the Doink the Clown characters. They had pockets of those kinds of characters, whereas I feel like Chikara and even pro wrestling that I went out and saw out in Anaheim when I was out there for WrestleMania a few years ago, that was really kind of the whole, you know, they were that campiness, that kitschiness was what the entire company was built around. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious from your perspective, you know, because you were more of a NWA JCP guy back in the day, which was obviously focused more on, you know, you had the Four Horsemen, you had the Russians, you had the Rock and Roll Express, but it was more of that mat wrestling, you know, serious. We're not doing lunchboxes and cartoon characters and action figures. And then you get to Chikara, which is a 180 of that, even more of a 180 of the WWE at the time, even though it had its moments of campiness. So what was it about Chikara that brought you to like and watch that and become such a diehard fan? Because you flew all the way out to Pennsylvania at one point to see
a few times to see shows. Yeah. One, I think just that change in growing up and what I liked. And when I got into Chikara, when I discovered them was, if I remember correctly, was around the 2004 or 5 Tag Grand Prix, which I didn't know anything about the company. And they were announcing teams that were going to be in the tournament, but they were also announcing like placeholder teams. So they had like teams of Hall and Oates, Scott Hall and John Oates, you know, stuff like Team WWF, which was CP Monk and Colt Cabana. And I was just like, what is this weird thing? And then watching it, the campy, it, so I guess to compare with Wrestling Pro Wrestling real quick, Wrestling Pro Wrestling to me was less about wrestling and more about just the wackiness. It was more performance art stuff. But then you would have, you know, a couple of matches on every show that were just really good wrestling matches. But then you would have the Fromage Horsemen and Terry Gordy, you know, stuff like that. Whereas Chikara, once I started watching it, the wrestling was really good. And so I guess that's the connection with JCP is JCP focused more on the wrestling than WWE or WWF at the time. And then the characters and the storytelling, you know, we talk about how bad storytelling has been in the past couple of few years, you know, and I mean, it took Chikara years to really see for a fan to see it, but you know, they operated on seasons instead of, you know, they went normally like February through November. And then, you know, there would be something in season 5 that referenced something that happened in season 2. And at the end of the first year of watching them, the Tag Grand Prix, that's when the finals were Claudio Castagnoli and Eric Cannon against Chris Hero and Mike Quackenbush. And Hero turned on Quack to side with Claudio and Aaron Cannon to form the Kings of Wrestling. And then they were just jerks the entire year. And then at that last show, Eric Cannon like kind of broke away and was like, this is too much for me. And he helped Quack and I think probably Jigsaw chase off the Kings of Wrestling. And then he looked at Quack and like, yeah, we did it. And Quack's like, what are you talking about? It's like, no, didn't you see? I just helped you. He's like, my memory goes back more than 15 seconds. And then like the next season, Eric Cannon, because he had won the Tag Grand Prix, got an automatic bid to be in the next tournament, but he couldn't find a tag team partner because no one wanted to tag with him because of everything that he had done the previous season. Whereas, you know, WWE, WCW, even AEW, if someone changes from face to heel or heel to face, all of a sudden they're friends with everybody on the other side. You know, it's not like, hey, no, you just beat me up last week. Now we're supposed to be friends. So that's what got me into the Chikara was, yes, the goofiness, you know, like the occasional Ken the Box or things, but they also had the wrestling could back up the goofiness, I guess.
I feel like with Chikara, it was ahead of its time in terms of technology, because I think in 2025, Chikara would work famously because of streaming. You know, if it had a streaming deal. Back in the day, you had to buy all those DVDs and to keep up with it, because they weren't airing on network television. So you really had to be a fan to be a part of this and to experience it. And we, you know, we traveled to Chicago and to Indiana, and we went and saw Chikara the year we were at WrestleMania in New Jersey. So I've been to a handful of Chikara shows, enough to know what's going on, but not to deep dive and recall like you've just done. But I think again, today, in today's environment, that would have worked. Even kind of like, and I never saw any of this, but like Lucha Underground, which is that kind of, it's a niche of a niche, and you really have to be invested in it to understand what's going on and to know what's going on. I think some fans watch, you know, casual fans watch because, hey, it's wrestling and you know, good guy versus bad guy. I get the gist of what's going on. I don't need to be invested in the story. But with Chikara and some of those other companies, man, they're really peeling back that onion, and you've got to know why this is significant and what makes sense here and whatnot. Now, we've seen, you know, you mentioned Claudio Castagnoli specifically, and I know Chris Hero is a trainer with AEW, but we've seen a lot of guys start or at least be a part of Chikara who have gone on to either AEW or WWE. You know, Johnny Gargano, Chuck Taylor, some of the guys that wrestled under the masks and different incarnations of characters have gone on and are big parts of Wednesday night and Friday night and Monday night wrestling. Who do you think was the biggest success story from the Chikara days?
You know, it's kind of a trick question, because I think the obvious answer is Orange Cassidy, except for the fact that he wasn't, I'm trying to think of Orange, or the Orange Cassidy character ever wrestled in Chikara. And he may have in the later days. He may have shown up with Chuck Taylor. I think he may have been part of the Gentleman's Club with Chuck Taylor and some other people that I'm forgetting right now. But, you know, to me, the guy that should have been the biggest success is Eddie Kingston, because he just did an interview with Renee Paquette that's up on the AEW YouTube channel, which I highly recommend. It's only like, it's about 20, 25 minutes long. But that guy is just that embodiment of the old school wrestler with today's sensibility. And to me, I guess he would be like a modern day Dusty Rhodes.
Okay.
He can wrestle, but he can also talk you into buying a ticket for any match that he's in and believing that it's legit. And I don't know if he doesn't realize that it's not legit, but that's the character that's there. And that character was in Chikara as well. I mean, he evolved over time, obviously, as he, you know, got more experience. But I guess in terms of actual success, I guess you'd have to go with Claudio, you know, being in WWE and tag champs there and whatnot.
Now, were Kevin Steen and Generico, they were just ROH. They didn't.
They showed up in. I mean, but they
like a car of stars, if you will.
Yeah, they were more guest stars.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I also would imagine, and I mean, this would be obviously a question for someone that actually has done it. I know with Stride, Tyler has wrestled in the Big Muddy Monster costume, which is cumbersome enough and hot, but some of those characters and costumes, and even with Wrestling Pro Wrestling, you know, I'm glad I took advantage when we were there to take, I took a lot of pictures and video, which I didn't have the, you know, back when we went to the Chikara shows, that was the early days of the iPhone, and I didn't take it much advantage then. But you know, like the Pop Tart and the dinosaur, the giraffe, you know, the three-headed giraffe. Some of these costumes are just so damn elaborate, and it does I don't want to say it takes you out of it, because you obviously, with wrestling, you are suspending your disbelief, and we're going to get more onto the mainstream side of things in just a minute. But is it more difficult for you to suspend disbelief when, you know, you've got the Undertaker summoning lightning, which is just as unbelievable as a guy dressed as a three-headed giraffe? You know, where do you draw the line?
What do you mean, guy dressed as a three-headed giraffe? It was a three-headed giraffe. Well, and yeah, you mentioned that earlier, and I think why some promotions can get away with it and others can't, it's again, and I've read this somewhere, it's when you create your world, let's say you have rules that operate within that world. Yeah. So with wrestling, pro wrestling, their rules are there's a three-headed giraffe, and there's a Pop-Tart, you know, a human Pop-Tart. Mm-hmm. And so when they do something outlandish, like bring in a Terry Gordy, or who's a giant gourd, or the Fromage Horseman, it makes sense. If you go to WWE, and where they have a more realistic world, when you bring, if you brought in a human Pop-Tart, people are going to be like, what the hell is this? Because it doesn't fit. It's like, you know, if in Waterworld, for example, if all of a sudden Marty McFly shows up in a time machine, you're like, wait, this doesn't fit in with this environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it's as long as you're operating under the dynamics that you've already created for your world, then suspension of disbelief is easy to do. It's when you go outside of that world and try to do something that doesn't fit.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good answer. And so let's go to WCW and WWE, WWF in the mid-90s. We talked earlier, you know, it feels like probably around 91, things started to kind of, the wheels were coming off for both companies. I think wrestling in general was starting to kind of lose some of its, and I don't know if that's, I mean, I think fans, obviously, you and I are into our, you know, eighth, ninth year of fandom by this point. Mm-hmm. So, but I think a lot of fans look, you know, because we're obviously growing up, we're teenagers, we're getting into college at this point. But I think most fans, even fans that were younger than us and fans that were older than us, cite kind of that early 90s as kind of being a shitty time for wrestling. Yeah. And the occupational gimmicks and all of that. So I don't think it's just our age group that felt that way. It was, there was something definitely going on. The Dungeon of Doom, for example, hokey as hell, the Shark, Kamala, Brutus Beefcake dressed as the Zodiac. I think they had a leprechaun, Kevin Sullivan, King Curtis, who had been in the WWF at one point. We had all of this silliness and this campiness, but then fast forward a couple of years to the Attitude Era, and it's basically, you know, the Ministry of Darkness and Midian and Viscera, and you know, you still have kind of that silliness going on, and it's like, is, you know, you're sacrificing Stephanie McMahon and you're doing all this stuff. And I feel like that era isn't as harshly criticized. But now, I do think at the same time as the Dungeon of Doom, when we had Duke Drosy and Doink and Dink and those characters, it all kind of get piled on. So is it the time period, or is it the characters and the gimmicks itself? Because the Yeti dressed in the, which the Yeti has many problems, in my opinion, was a guy dressed as a mummy and not the big, when I think snowman, of Yeti, I think of the big snow monster. So
yeah, or he should have been a cooler.
I think he inspired the cooler. We'll give Ron
Reese. Well, I mean, he did cool off in the heat that was in the ring, but yeah.
That's true. But what were you thinking back then? Because, you know, you're in your early 20s watching WCW. I'm assuming you were still watching at this point. We were in college at the time. But were you still watching? And was it, you know, because to me, this era, and I can remember going on, this was the very early days of the internet and going on the, there was a rec.sports.prowrestling news group that I went on to in the library at university all the time. And, you know, it was always people dogging kind of that goofy, silly shit that they were doing in WCW, but also with, like I said, the McMahon stuff that was going on with the WWF. It was just a bad time for wrestling. What were you, or what are your memories of that era? And then how do you look back on it 30 years later?
Yeah. Well, I think you know, when it comes to the Dungeon of Doom, what I was just saying is why the Dungeon of Doom, one of the reasons that the Dungeon of Doom didn't work is because it didn't fit into the world that WCW had spent years building. You know, you bring Hulk Hogan's in and now you're bringing in the WWE cartoony stuff instead of, you know, the I Quit matches where guys taking a spike to another guy's eyeball, or, you know, the 60 minute Broadway technical wrestling matches. It's now campy shit that you're getting. And I think also the quality of talent, you know, I hate to be a, well, the work rate isn't the greatest. And, you know, so the match is terrible. It's like, no, as long as you, it doesn't, you know, as long as you're entertained, who cares about work rate? But I think that's why it didn't work. Why WCW would get the, you know, the criticism. And over in WWE, you know, once everybody again started having second jobs, and they're like, okay, well, if you're a professional race car driver, why are you also a wrestler? You know, how do you have time to travel and be a wrestler if you got to collect trash, you know, or people's trash cans just sitting out? You know, it, I think it became more, and, you know, we've had that conversation of character versus gimmick.
Yeah.
And I think, I think somewhere in the early 30s, or the early 30s, yes, back in the less, if you remember Luthes, when he tried to be a mime wrestler, that was. But yeah, it just, and again, you know, it's, I would say with like pop culture, you have like a 5-year span of popularity, and then trends change because people age. And so you have to, you're getting a new audience while your old audience is probably being phased out or aging out. And so I think with wrestling in the 90s, like you said, it had been 7-8 years since the, you know, the birth of Hulkamania. You know, and I guess we can look at it in today where, you know, John Cena's been around for 20 years and he's essentially been the John Cena that we know today for the last 15. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, the last 4 or 5, he hasn't been around as much. But I think going back to the 90s, like Hulk Hogan had ran his course.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and I think people wanted something new. But a problem with wrestling promoters is they'll run that horse until it's dead, and then they'll beat that horse and they'll try to extract as much glue from it as they can. As we've seen, you know, that's why we still have Bloodline 37 going on in WWE. It's like, and, but people still, you know, like that. So why change what's working?
So do you think, because, you know, I have heard podcasts, obviously, Eric Bischoff just actually recently talked about it as well. I think Kevin Sullivan, who was the booker at the time in WCW, or one of the bookers, kind of came up with this Dungeon of Doom concept because Hulk Hogan had a level of comfort working with guys like Brutus Beefcake and Earthquake, who became Shark, and Kamala, and, you know, all of those guys that he had wrestled in the past. And so I think transitioning to that WCW style of Sting and Flair and even Big Van Vader, even though Vader was kind of that over the top gimmick as well, the Giant, there was probably a level of discomfort or maybe even distrust coming from Hulk Hogan, where they're appeasing the big name star to kind of make it, but in the process, and even though they kind of, I don't want to say sunk to WWE's level, because I obviously was a bigger WWE, WWF fan back then. But to go more mainstream, I don't think we're having this conversation had Hogan not gone to WCW. I think that they would have eventually piddled out and went away. So I do think, or as many faults as people find with him, Hulk Hogan gave WCW life, and in 94 when he came in, but then in 96 when he turned heel, it was a whole different world under him. And then I feel like we got more of the realistic because, you know, the Blood Runs Cold gimmick with Glacier and you know, Mortis and all those guys, that was kind of that campy, cartoony, what's the video game that it was coming after?
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, it came a little too late, you know, because then we're injecting the reality of the NWO. And I think that, that really kind of became the antithesis for all of this other change that happened on the board that sparked the Attitude Era that brought us to where we are or were in the late 90s.
Yeah. And my, I mean, I agree with you, but I think that the catalyst for that was ECW, which was founded, I believe, because Todd Gordon saw the Papa Shango's, the Doinks the Clown, and said, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
And wanted something more realistic. And, and you know, for some unknown reason, got guys together that sacrificed their bodies, did a lot of stupid things in the ring that were very entertaining. And it was that counterculture to the mainstream. And then because, you know, ECW was never huge. I think they probably lived longer than they rightfully should have, given everything going on in the company. But if, again, had it not been for ECW, would WCW have brought in the cruiserweights? Would they have gone with the NWO realistic storyline? Obviously, WWF started taking stars and, you know, incorporating stuff from ECW. I remember when the My 1-2-3 Cents blog first started, I wrote a post about it. Like 1995, 96 was just the perfect storm for wrestling to change. And I don't, and I think if you take one piece, like you said, if you take Hogan out of WCW, where do they go in 96, 97? If you take ECW out, where did WWF and WCW go? And if you take the Click out of WWF, we don't get Stone Cold. So where does WWF go in that regard? And that's probably a whole nother topic of discussion. Yeah. But yeah, I think, and I think the you know, the grunge movement had come in. Again, we talk about pop culture and culture in general, things were just changing from what they were from the 80s, basically. So,
Could you see the, you know, because let's look at the last, I don't know, decade or so in terms of, you know, I'm going to focus mostly on WWE with this part of the discussion. But, you know, we talked about that, you know, in the blind ranking of the campy, kind of cartoony, over the top characters becoming WWE champion. And in 1991, I think it was too early for The Undertaker, you know, and granted, he only held it for a week. I almost, in hindsight, wish they would have waited and maybe done Undertaker Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 8. I know a lot of people wanted Flair Hogan at WrestleMania 8, but it just felt like doing it at Survivor Series in 91, it was too soon. And maybe even WrestleMania 8 would have been too soon. But because, again, to me, The Undertaker was still kind of that flash in the pan. He was not going to be a 30-year veteran, as he ended up becoming. Kane, kind of the same way. You know, he beats Austin in 98, 6 months or 8 months after his debut. For that first run, but then he went on to win it a few more times. But Bray Wyatt is the only other one that comes to mind immediately when I think of kind of those over the top ish gimmicks. And he held it for a cup of coffee, lost it to Randy Orton at WrestleMania a handful of years ago. They did some weird effects with that match and whatnot. But would the Fiend, you know, had Bray Wyatt lived, would the Fiend have gone on to climb back up to the top of the mountain? And are there, would those kind of over the top, because I don't even thinking now with WWE and AEW to an extent, I don't think of anyone that's really kind of that over the top I've got to really suspend my belief. You know, like, I don't think Pop-Tart Boy is going to come to WWE become heavyweight champion.
No, especially since college football sacrifices him every year.
But I'm trying to think, like, is there anyone that I'm missing that
do that? Yeah. I mean, I guess you would put the Wyatt Six in there. And I, you know, I've said before on the show, I think the problem with Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt Six, going back to my point earlier, is they don't fit into the world seamlessly. Like, there's a disconnect. It was like when they come out and you have the announcers being like, oh my gosh, you know, being scared and being all spooky. And then you go to commercial and you come back and like, okay, so now we're going back to this next match. And it's like, well, what just happened 30 seconds ago?
Yeah.
But I think, and I think the White Six have kind of toned down. Again, I don't watch SmackDown. So I can't, I know they're the tag champions right now, I believe.
I think they just lost.
Did they?
I think they lost. I think they lost to, that was Finn Balor and that was the Raw champ. So
they just lost to AJ Lee.
Yeah.
So I guess in that regard, I think the Fiend was a good character, but I think there was just something, there is a disconnect between like a promo from the Fiend and then, as I say, and then the bell rings.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But do you see anyone else beyond the Wyatt Six or even in AEW, you know, because I see all the clips on social, but I'm trying to think doesn't feel like there's anyone that's kind of over the top.
The only one I could think of would be maybe Aleister Black, but he's not.
Right.
Super, you know, he's just spooky, I guess, when he comes out. He's not doing anything over the top.
We don't have the Papa Shango's and Doinks of the 90s.
Or the Phantasmos, no.
Yeah, in modern day wrestling. It's interesting. Because again, you know, I mean, maybe like a Mr. Iguana or someone like that, but it's always interesting to see because you do have that line of what's going to appeal to kids, but also their parents. And I think WWE's business model since TKO has taken over has changed and they're looking more for money in pocket versus butts and seats. And this is really, I think, AEW's chance to kind of take advantage of that and be that family-friendly, financially alternative. But I think at the same time, and this is probably a whole nother discussion too, they're going to have to tone down some of their blood and guts, if you will, if they want to appeal to more than just, because I know they've kind of said, hey, we're family affordable. You can bring your family to watch, but do I want my kids to see a guy go through a plate glass window every week or every other week or do the thumb know, again, that's not my style of wrestling. And I know that there is a whole fan base out there that lives for that stuff. So I'm not judging it. I'm just saying from a broad perspective that may be something they considered thinking about in the future.
Yeah. And I guess that's the two sides of the coin thing is definitely this is the time that they can promote themselves as being affordable. At the same time, they want to be different from WWE because if I want WWE style, I'm going to watch WWE. I mean, you know, this is the complaint that we've had with TNA for 20 years is like, you have to give me something different than what I'm already getting for me to turn my attention span over to you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, this, because I was such an ECW fan when they were around, to me, AEW kind of has that same ability to have multiple styles of wrestling in a show. And so, whereas WWE, I think, is pretty, for the most part, pretty flat. It's like, you're going to get the same, you know, whoever's wrestling, there's the same formula to the match. It's the same setup. So, and again, I don't know anything about the financials. So as long as you're putting on a show that entertains me, do whatever you want. You know, I'm not going to, again, I'm not going to say and be like, oh, the ratings were down by 0.3% right. this week. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't affect me. Did I like the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I'm going to come back next week and watch. Did I not like the show? Then I'm going to find something better to do with my time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's probably a good note to wrap up this week's episode on. Chad, anything else you want to add before we do put a bow on this week's show?
Trying to think. I thought there's no. I mean, as we record this, Monday Night Raw is in Anaheim tomorrow, the day this episode drops. If you watch the show, don't look for me because I will not be there.
You decided not to, huh?
Oh, I wasn't going to go.
You were being sarcastic.
Yeah, the cheapest tickets were $75 for the nosebleeds. I'm like, one, I need a job. So
I
don't have the money. But also, for a Monday night, you know, weekly show, I'm not paying several hundred dollars to sit close.
Yeah.
So, I got to save my money for Thumbtacks and, you know, whenever AEW releases that Orange Crush playset, Jericho and Orange Cassidy in a vat of Fanta.
All right. Well, I do want to do a quick shout out to Dan Turnquist, aka Red Daniels from Stride Pro Wrestling, made a huge donation to the My 123 Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. There is still time to buy a raffle ticket on the Jurassic Express figures. Proceeds from that going towards the drive as well. But reach out to me on social media. Leave your thoughts on this week's episode. Let us know. Who were some of the over-the-top gimmicks that never were world champ that maybe you would have seen have a run as the heavyweight champion of their respective company? Let us know in the comments. Thanks for listening and or watching, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.